you talked about how we make you blush, and you still come back for more.
Well, first, do you want to explain how you showed up on my podcast?
I need to learn so I can show up on his podcast. I would love to explain that because I think that shows my selling abilities. Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes business sexy again.
I'm Gina Tremarco, sales trainer and consultant at Pivot 10 Results and founder of Carolina Improv Company that's back in business. Woohoo!
Woo woo! And I'm Rachel Pitts, mommy, wifey, mortgage loan officer with US Mortgage, and creator of the Ultra Fit Lifestyle. So excited about this today. It's a great episode. You guys are going to love it.
Oh my gosh. I don't even think we need to read his bio because he's been on our show so many times, Jeb Blunt, everybody knows I had a business crush on him. I still have a business crush on him, especially because I'll be working with Sales Gravy University soon. So super excited about that because if it wasn't for this show, I don't know if that would be happening. So what do you think of that?
I don't know. What's really, really fun about this episode is now that we've had the honor of having Jeb on our show a couple of times, it's more of, it's a little more relaxed. He feels relaxed enough to drop the F-bomb a few times in this, which was, it's interesting when you meet somebody that you just kind of have a little bit on a pedestal as we have with, mm-hmm. just because he's so knowledgeable and respected in the sales world. And then all of a sudden we're like, he's like us. He says fuck too. Woo!
That so. Was a hoot. So yeah, sit back, everybody. This is about virtual selling and Jeb's new book. I'm not even going to go through his bio because it'll be in the show notes and most everybody listening to us know who Jeb is. So go sit back, get ready for a really wild ride with some great knowledge nuggets with Jeb Blunt.
Okay, so you're going to play a game with me. I know you sent me, and here's the thing. You sent me an email about this, but I didn't read the email. So I have no idea what you're going to do. I just saw there's going to be a game, and there were a lot of words on it. And I was like, too many words. I'm moving on. So,
well, I'm like, I'm going to give a heads up just in case. But that's good. You don't really need it. So there's this game. And, you know, we do swear on this, but I think I'll blush if I swear in front of you. So there's this game.
I know you're going to come to our studios, but you recognize that our second word around here is the F-bomb. Like we use it as an adjective, a noun, and a verb on in every other sentence. We're just clean
not
on
important.
Video.
So you're welcome. Okay. Okay, then, because we're not clean. So for the
I'm like show, that. I feel you.
You probably won't. You'll share it. You'll still share it. So the game is called, and correct me if I'm wrong, Fuck, Marry, or Kill. Is that right? Fuck, marry, or kill.
Now, is marry so a your person answer, but we've or changed marry it. Is getting married? Okay.
The other version is kiss, keep, or kill, okay. which was the clean okay. version that so, we came up with for...
we came okay. up with a clean version. Now do we even need it now? So the clean version is kiss, keep, or kill. So one of your answers has to be kiss, keep, or kill to the following questions. Okay. So here are the three things: virtual selling, face to face selling, phone selling. Which one are you going to kiss?
I'm going to.
Or make love to.
Kiss phone selling. Wait a minute. That's not a fair question. I'm kipping them all.
We're trying to establish which one you prefer is the whole game, Jeb.
Right, but the problem is that I got to kill one of them. What's the other one? Fuck, marry, or what?
kill. You still kill it. You fuck it or you kill it.
I want to fuck it and keep it. So I'm gonna. Because. I mean, I like Cujo. All of those. I mean, so we're going to. Get married to virtual selling. We're going to keep in person, because it's not going to go away. We're still going to do some in-person selling. And we're going to bang the fuck out of the phone. How about that?
Ah.
Excuse my language, everybody. Y'all ever hear me cuss? Like, I'm so very high. I do it all the time when I'm in private, but I just, you know. So how's...
We bring the fuck out of you.
Was that, that was improv.
That was good. That was good.
That was amazing.
Well, and really, and to be a great salesperson, you really have to be the master of all of them, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to be good at all of them. All three of those are important. And phone and virtual. The phone is the ultimate virtual tool.
And I guess you can also say there's benefits to fucking marrying and killing.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
Thank you for playing.
Do I get another question? Is that the only one I got? I like the game. I thought you had more.
That was it.
Well, give us a second and we can come up with some, probably.
Well, maybe we'll come up with some more along the way. How about that? How about we improvise that?
Okay.
One of the things that happened a few weeks ago, I had invited you to come to one of my virtuals, and you schooled me really fast, which is part of leading to this conversation about your new book, Virtual Selling. And I wanted you to come see me in action on the improv virtually for the reasons of us working together. And we got on the phone for like an hour and a half, and you gave me some really great schooling on it, in all seriousness, that opened my eyes, that is part of this conversation today, of what goes into a virtual training and speaking world. And I know exactly what you're talking about. Speaking to a camera, and even right now, I can't see you guys because I'm looking at the camera, so you feel me looking at you, right? And if you're not getting any feedback, especially on like a Zoom webinar, and it's just you in an echo chamber, is anybody out there? It takes a while to get used to that. And I had said to you, I said, well, I'm just trying to feel out this like improv in a virtual world, and I'm throwing things at the wall. And you're like, I don't believe in throwing things at the wall. I'm like, okay, all right, I'll take that too. But when you're not used to doing anything but improvising and being live in front of people, and now you have to learn this whole new way of doing things. I'm not uncomfortable in front of a camera at all. It's just the interaction piece of it. And how do we go virtual? And then you told me about the new book that I was like, already you're writing another new book? How do you do this so fast?
So Jeb, I have this question for you about virtual selling. Did you already have the book Virtual Selling in your pipeline prior to COVID happening? Or did you immediately start working on that when the pandemic began?
So I think it was like March the 20th, something like that. It was towards the end of March, and it was right after all this happened. Like, I finished up the audiobook, went home, and we're faced with this brand new world. And I was in the shower, which I do a lot of thinking in the shower. Crazy as it sounds, I write a lot of books in the shower. And I'm like, virtual selling, I got to write this book. So got out, went downstairs and called my editor up in New York and said, I got this crazy idea, Shannon. And don't laugh at me, but we're going to write a book from scratch, and we're going to get it on the market in 60 days. And what do you think? And she said, okay, let's do it. I'm like, because I was expecting that she was going to reject me, because I was always prepared for, what am I going to do if she says no? Because I really don't want to have to self-publish a book. So she said, let's go for it. To their credit, I had a contract in hand the next day, and the book was on Amazon 2 days later. Like, the book cover you see right now, they got it to me overnight. We did a couple of changes on it, and we dropped it up. I love this book. I mean, I love the book cover. I think it turned out great. And then we sat down to write. I do not recommend it. This is the longest book I've ever written. It was 85,000 words. And I think I could have kept going, because there's so much to write about here. And we basically flipped it around. I had it to them in 60 days. We spent another couple of weeks of really hard editing to get it out on Kindle. So it came out on Kindle in June. And then the hardcover just came out a couple of weeks ago. And we would have had the hardcover out except for COVID screwed all the printing presses up and nobody's coming to work. So it took a little bit longer to do that. But no, it was purely from scratch in that moment. I think this is one of the things that I keep hearing this over and over again, but I think a lot of people are waking up and they're realizing in this particular world that, of course, COVID and any kind of a crisis like this exposes cracks, and it exposes any business that, as Warren Buffett says, has been swimming naked, right? It exposes all of that. But at the same time, it puts us in situations where we suddenly start doing things that we never thought was possible. It typically takes 24 to 18 months, somewhere in that neighborhood, usually 2 years, to get a book from conception to print. And that's how publishers work. So you're looking way out. You got to think ahead of the trends to get there. And my publisher, John Wiley and Sons, and Shannon, who's one of their vice presidents, who's my editor as well, is, you know, I talked to her the other day, I said, your leadership made this happen. You said this is possible, but we're doing things we never thought was possible, including Gina, who is, you know, learning how to, you know, do improv online and teach classes online. I think everybody's having to step up. But then you look back and go, well, damn, I wrote a book in 60 days. I could do that again. All I just need is 60 days, and I need to be off the road. I need to have some, you know, some things fall into place. So what's possible for us and for everybody, whether you're in sales or in business or you're a teacher or you're a mom or what have you, you're learning that you can do way more than you ever thought you could. So a lot of self-imposed limits go away. And that's the dark side of situations like we're in right now, is that a lot of people suffer, but the bright side, the part that changes the world, is that a lot of people wake up one day and the adversity just makes them better, or it opens up the door to do something extraordinary. And virtual selling, I guess since I'm with y'all, I'll just share, because you guys overshare with me too. So
do it. tell us.
On Friday, I was completely overwhelmed. I mean, on Friday afternoon, I was just in a place where I don't even know how you call it. I was just in, like, almost in shock. This book is doing so well. It is doing better than any book that I've ever published. It's number 12, and it's crushing it in a way that I never believed was possible. And I was just overwhelmed to the point where I wasn't bawling like a little baby, but a tear or two might have come out of my eyes without anybody seeing it, right? Just for a moment, where it just blew me away that the effort, everything that went into it got, you know, was paid off. It could have been a complete flop. Who knows? But I think that's what these type of situations do for us. And that's why I was coaching Gina, because in this, my experience has been, you know, you got to believe in yourself and believe in your product and believe in your ability and be confident, and people will respond in that way, and will respond in kind to what you're doing.
And I was so grateful for you being willing to coach me. I was like, "Can I give you some money and we can?"
Well, I love how you use the Jeb voice in there. So when you said what I was saying to you, you use my voice. I don't know why women do that, because that is a purely women thing. My wife does the same thing. So whenever, you know, you were talking to me and she could, like, that's not how I sound.
that's the performer in me, you know,
becoming a different person.
You know, we appreciate that you always want to come back to us, because you talked about how we make you blush, and you still come back for more.
Well, first, do you want to explain how you showed up on my podcast?
I need to learn so I can show up on his podcast.
I would love to explain that, because I think that shows my selling abilities. I think so. I was telling someone else this story. I've told a few people this story. I show up to this wonderful Clubhouse set, which I can't wait to visit very soon, and Jeb's getting all ready, and he's got one of his people there getting him ready, and I'm on the other end at home on a Saturday morning, and Jeb's he's like, "Okay, I'm ready." And I go, "Okay, I'm ready." And he's like, "All right, I'm ready." I'm like, "Me too." This dead silence. And then he goes, who's interviewing who? Are you interviewing me, or am I interviewing you? And I'm like, "Well, Jeb, we just had you on like 2 weeks ago." I'm like, "You're interviewing me." And then Jeb goes, Wow, I don't know what you did with Lisa to get on here, but I'm not taking anybody on right now. I'm not doing any interviews. I don't know how you managed to do that. I'm like, I don't know. We just asked her and she scheduled it. And Jeb, want to talk about amazing improv? So, of course, Jeb didn't think he was interviewing me. So he's done no preparation, zero preparation on what he's even going to talk about with me. And it was, I'm so happy with the final version of it because it was I was so impressed with how you ran the interview.
Well, thank you. That was funny. I laugh about that all the time. Like, how the hell did you end up on my podcast?
Who let this person in here? Like,
I said to her, like, how the hell did you end up here? I don't let people, nobody gets on my podcast.
Brilliant.
Well, maybe our phenomenal producer, Doug, would like to chime in because Doug was in on it with Lisa. Like, your people and our people were in cahoots on this. So I don't know how it all happened.
It was serendipity. It turned out great. So it was good.
That's right.
That's right. Doug said, Doug just exactly. Told Lisa Jeb owes me. That's what he said.
And it's turning into a beautiful future.
A beautiful future. There you go.
As
absolutely.
A result. Because you would have never, we would have never had the yes and conversation that's leading to more. So, hey, Warners, hope you are enjoying this episode so far. Just wanted to tell you something real quick. If you got something out of this show and want to support it more, check out our new and exciting Patreon page. It's patreon.com/Warners, where you can leave us a tip and help support the show. That would be really cool. So patreon.com/Warners. And now back to the show. Let's talk more about your book, because we see all the changes that are happening and you were motivated to write this book. What are some of the biggest things that maybe salespeople are not adapting to or doing right in this climate that they can learn from your book?
Let's just start with some reality. And I just got off the phone with a massive organization that is looking at their sales organization. And they're trying to figure out what they can do to accelerate. Well, really, take another way to look at it, make sure that they don't lose the year. So one of the things that they're really, I think, bringing to the surface, and it's an interesting emotional conversation to have on a sales call, is that they've got a certain part of their sales organization that's just in mourning. So they're looking backwards. They're looking in the rearview mirror, and they're wishing that things would go back to the way they were. So I think one of the biggest issues for salespeople right now is not whether you're virtual selling or in-person selling or phone selling or doing anything else. You're just immobile because you're mourning and you're wishing and hoping and praying that things are going to go back. I also think that a lot of people have been waiting. Like, maybe I can just wait this out. And you're not going to be able to wait it out. The world has changed. It's not going to go back. It's changed, and it's changed forever. And that's what transformational moments do. So transformational moments are transformational moments for you personally, for your business, for the country, for the world. These things stick long term. 9/11 is a great example. That was a transformational moment. Travel has never been the same. It never went back. If you look at the last recession, the Great Recession, the hardest time that we ever had before this. And by the way, I bet the two of you would say exactly the same thing. When you went through the Great Recession, you never believed that you would ever have to endure that again in your lifetime. You thought, like, I mean, I remember talking to my grandparents about the Great Depression. They never quit talking about it. They talked about their entire life. You get a couple of scotches to my granddad and you're going to go back to the Great Recession because that's what he did. Like, he lived in it. But he never saw that ever happen again. I mean, they saw a couple of recessions, but they never saw anything like that. We've done it twice in 10 years. It's craziness. But this thing is where it is. Yeah. So the biggest issue for salespeople right now is to wake up. We can just use the word, wake the fuck up, right? And wake the fuck up because it's not going to change. You need to look out of the rear, the front windshield of the whatever vehicle you're driving and look to the future. Now, That does not mean that we're in a situation where face-to-face selling is dead. And I address this at the very beginning of the book. It is not dead. It is not going the way. Only a fool would argue that any form of communication other than face-to-face is better, because it's not. The way that human beings communicate, I mean, if we were in a room together doing this interview, we would have a lot deeper connection. Now, we have a level of familiarity because we've done this a few times. So it's a lot easier for us to do this the third time than it was for us to do it the first time. So we've created that connection over video, but it takes a little bit longer to build that. However, if we all had to get on airplanes to do this podcast, it wouldn't be efficient. So in some cases, even though face-to-face may be the best way to communicate, it's not the efficient or the most cost-effective way. So for salespeople right now, if we just take those two lessons, one lesson, wake the fuck up, it's not changing. And the second lesson is what's going to change, and what you need to step into is a new world that is blended. Yes, in certain industries right now, your only way of going to market is virtual, but that's not going to always be the same. We're going to move into a world, and get used to hearing this world, blending. You are going to be blending many different communication channels together to create a great emotional experience for your customer as they go through the buying process. And what you need to start doing is looking at your sales process, looking at your targeted customer base, looking at each opportunity in your pipeline, and making a probability adjustment. What is the probability that this particular communication channel will get me to the outcome that I desire at the lowest cost of time, effort, and money? Now, let's take this back again. This is the decision we have to make. Then we have to look at the opportunity and look at the next move on the chessboard and say, I'm going to, based on what's in front of me, pick the communication channel that in this moment with this client, with this opportunity at this time, with this particular move, is going to give me the highest probability of closing for the next step, getting the outcome that I desire, with the lowest cost of time, energy, and money. That's simple. And that's what the future is going to be, versus where we were, which is, well, you know what? They want to see me, so I'm just going to go get on the airplane. And that's what CFOs were telling us. When I was writing this book, I had CFOs say, I'm buy this for everybody, because we'll just get on the airplane. We'll just get in our car. We'll drive across town. We didn't need to do that. So as you start to wake up and start looking at the new world, don't mourn, oh my God, I wish we could go back to where we were before. Think, I can be more productive. I can accomplish more. I can shorten sales cycles. Not only can I double my productivity, I can quadruple my productivity because I'm able to use my time and energy wiser. So yes, there are going to be moments where you need to be face-to-face. There is no doubt about that. It matters in some situations. If you're going to invest the time and energy and money to be face-to-face, just pick wisely so that when you go there, you're getting big outcomes from it, and it matters. Otherwise, we have this entire, it's just this bucket full of tools that we can use. This is the most exciting time ever to be in sales, so you can connect with people in unique ways, and you can accomplish what you do as a salesperson, which is to help your customers solve their problems and reach their business goals.
Boom. So good. Do you think that in today's world, because it's interesting that this pandemic has created, as you were saying, in a nutshell, so much opportunity. There's some people that prefer virtual, especially, you know, the millennial generation, that they'd much rather be on their phone consuming whatever it is that you have than actually have to talk to you face to face. Is that, do you agree with that?
I think that, my son, who's a Gen Z, was explained to me yesterday, you know, people in my generation don't like to blah. And I just said, you're making a massive generalization that's just not true. Because he was saying, you know, people in my generation don't read books. And I go, I had a Gen Z yesterday ask me for an autographed copy of a book. So you can't really say that, right? You don't like to read books. That's what you're saying. So I think that every human being out there, right, that says I value my time is going to try to pick a way of managing their time. I think when you deal with, say, millennials and Gen Zs, and I'm a Gen Xer, so, but I'm way more millennial than most millennials. And that's the truth. If you pick those groups, are they going to be more accepting? So if I come to someone who's a Gen Z and say, can I set up a video call? There, it's going to be a lot easier for them to step into a video call than, say, someone who is a boomer. And the boomers are moving out of the world, it's going to be easier for them. However, when you get into our virtual selling boot camps, we have people of all ages. The number one thing that people are nervous about is looking at a camera. I mean, that's what makes them nervous. And it makes a difference if you're a Gen Z or if you're 70 years old, it's still a problem. So what we have to teach people is how to get comfortable with the camera. And it's hard. There's no doubt about it. It's a tough thing to stare at a camera screen all day long. But I think that the biggest issue is for salespeople is not so much will my customer accept this or are these people better at it. Is most salespeople aren't asking. Like they're not asking for the right channel. And sometimes, in some cases, they're asking for an in-person meeting when they could have a phone call and it would just be just as good. Sometimes they're asking for a phone call when they should be doing a video call. This is especially true for account executives and inside sales teams who show up and talk over a bunch of PowerPoints. By the way, they're all millennials versus putting their face on the screen. Even though we know when they put their face on the screen, sales cycles reduce and close rates go up. And then sometimes, you know, the best thing for you to do is to, you know, just pick up the phone and have a 2-minute conversation and solve a problem. Sometimes email's the best way of doing things. And so I think the question is, from the salesperson standpoint, is what do I need to do in this particular moment to accomplish that goal and stop worrying about what other people might think, right? So, but if my buyer says, listen, a video call is not going to be comfortable for me, can I do a phone call? I'm going to go, yeah, I'm going to do a phone call with you. No, not a problem. Some customers are going to insist that you go meet with them. But then as an organization, you got to figure out, is it worth my time to get on an airplane to go to Germany to go meet with somebody? Do I really want to do that? I might not even want to do that anymore. Go, you know what? I don't need customers like that. You know, let somebody who's next door to them do that. So I think that overall, rather than saying, you know, like some people, this person, I'm much more around the probability. I'm much more around salespeople being intentional and asking and also not confusing people by, for example, you know, grabbing the invite off the Zoom and sending the person the entire invite, which got about 400 numbers on there, and having that person figure out randomly, is it a video call or is it a phone call? I mean, who knows what it is? I just think that the key thing here is that we salespeople need to be driving what the process looks like. And I don't have people when I say, can you get on a video call with me, say no. Nobody says that. And I was just on the phone with a bunch of Gen Xers, or on a video call, a bunch of Gen Xers, and everybody was on the screen. In fact, there was one person that wasn't on the screen. Everybody else was on the screen. And then he got, I think, shamed and then put himself on the screen. So, you know, it just...
He was like...
Yeah, I know. It's like the one that's like, put some pants on.
He had to put his pants on.
Right. So, but I think that's the key. Like, instead of you getting all hung up emotionally about what people will and won't accept, you run your sales process. And when you run your sales process, it works. If it's face to face, you say, listen, the first step is I'm going to come there and sit down at your desk and have a conversation with you. They don't go, no, let's do it on the phone. They go, okay, come on. I mean, you drove what that process was going to look like. So I would say for most people who are hung up in these type of generalizations, hang them up and run your process. But you got to think about what the process is going to be. What's the best, highest probability channel in this particular moment that's going to cost you the least amount of money and effort and time?
You know, and Jeb, along that lines of the process and driving the process, I think another key part of the process, we often talk about playbook versus book of play in an improv world. You have to listen to what the client is saying too. Because I've had clients ask me, or prospects ask me, can we get on a Zoom call? Well, yeah. I didn't have to propose it. That was their preference. And I have found it to be far more effective because, like we were saying, it'd be so much more fun for us all to be in the same room together. But now that people have gotten so used to doing video calls, it's becoming more and more comfortable and more the norm, and more requests to, like, they want to see your face. But you have to listen. You have to listen if they're suggesting that, and that's their process. Hey, if that works for them, I'm in.
No, if we just dial this into human connection, okay? So, you know, what we were just talking about was what people will accept and like what's the best channel. But if we dial it into human connection, and this is why, for example, with millennial account executives, and I'm a Gen Xer, and I'm standing over them in their offices coaching them, and I'm like, put your face on camera. I don't really look really good right now. I'm like, you're a salesperson. Be video ready. Show up ready to go. You're having a conversation with someone trying to get them to buy a really expensive piece of software that they're going to get married to. Oh, we brought Mary back for the rest of their life, right? So maybe if you showed up and got on the camera and had a conversation with them versus talking over your screen and being inhuman, they would connect with you and it would be a better experience for them. So for me, that's like, that's the key for us is, what are we doing? How are we connecting with them in the right way? Now, the video, the reason why people like a Zoom call is that at the end of the day, right, face-to-face is the best way. But what we're trying to do on a video call is to create the closest facsimile possible to an in-person conversation. So, and I think that's where we have to think, you know, differently. I don't like, we sell deals overseas. You know, when we go, you know, to our clients that are in different countries, I don't ever get on an airplane to go close a deal in a different country. The whole thing is on video, everything. And it's been that way for years. So if there's one thing that you can do, if the client says, I want to be on a Zoom, it's raising your game. And I think this is super important, because if you're a millennial or you're a Gen Zer or whatever, you have to change the way that you're dealing with people. You need to lift it up. You got to be better. So, and just even, you know, even just your, you know, the backdrop, what's behind you, how you look on camera, your lighting, all those things matter greatly. So, When you get in your car, if you're a field salesperson, you get in your car to go see people, you dress for success. Almost everybody dresses nicely. Same thing happens on the camera. You got to act like you're mean to be there, and that you're going to a sales call. And if there's one thing, and Rachel, I'll give you this on the millennials and the Gen Zs, I'm having pretty hard conversations with people about, you can't show up to your sales call wearing a hoodie and a backward baseball cap, because it makes you feel like you're cool because you have a job in San Francisco, but you're talking to a business owner who's 57 years old in Des Moines, Iowa, and that ain't gonna play in Des Moines, Iowa. So you need to start, you know, thinking about how you're dressing, how you look. And I have to explain to a lot of these younger salespeople that are coming up, because they'll tell me, well, I'm just being the authentic me. And I just like, if you're being the authentic you, authenticity without regard to your audience is arrogance.
Ooh, that is a great quote. Did just you right just come up with
it's
that?
In the book. I wrote the book, but it is my quote.
As you were talking, you were giving me anxiety about my backdrop, because if you guys are listening to this podcast, Jeb has a fantastic mm-hmm. backdrop with all of his plethora of books and things that he's produced. And Gina's got a nice backdrop, and yeah. I've got a picture of the dog up there.
I like
there
we that.
Go. I received a gift. Ooh. In the background.
I like it.
I don't know if you can see it. Somebody gave that to James. Me last week.
James Beatty. So that's pretty good. Now, you have a really nice backdrop. So one of the nice things about your backdrop is that that you have a window behind you, but you've got a good enough lighting in front of you, so it's canceling out the light coming from behind. I like the windows. And there you go, ring light. And then, you know, Rachel, we're looking at your backdrop, the coaching I would give you is lose the beige wall. So put a picture behind you. Right. And then lose that cavernous space behind you, because what happens is when you're in a space like that, the eyes go beyond you and start looking back into the space. So if you're going to have a beige wall, better just to have the wall behind you without the other piece there. But you would want to create, put something, there you go. And then you want a nice picture. Like, I don't know, I can send you one of these, like a picture of the Sales Gravy book. Like, we put that over there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So. So it's because those things matter now. So it's now that everybody's on Zoom, it's just like anything else. Now you got to elevate. Now you got to raise your game.
Well, speaking of that, are there some other recommendations you can make for being video ready?
Yeah, I mean the big thing is dressing well. There's a psychological term called enclothed cognition, which simply says that when your brain knows when you're not dressed all the way. So a lot of people, for them, a video call is like a mullet, right? It's business on the top and party on the bottom. And
It was good.
For the record, so, I have never gone on a Zoom call without pants on. Like, I don't understand that fact.
if you're sitting there in your pajama pants, or you're in a pair of shorts, or wearing your boxers, or, you know, whatever you got on, your fuzzy slippers, your brain knows that you're not all the way dressed. So the confidence isn't there. So if you're selling from home, which a lot of people are going to be for a long period of time. And by the way, this isn't new either. I was selling from home in the 90s, where we had a vice president sell that took all the salespeople and put them in home offices. I loved it. It was great. Way more productivity. But you need to dress all the way so that you feel the level of confidence. Because for more than anything, you're trying to transfer your energy, your confidence, your enthusiasm through the camera. So another thing that for me is a big deal is that people can see your hands. When and this is happening at the subconscious level, but the brain fills in gaps. And one of the things that the brain is used to seeing when it's talking to people is hands. We talk with our hands, we emote with our hands, and in any situation, in any in-person call or a video call or even a phone call, phone's different because they're listening to a tone of voice, but what the brain is doing is trying to assign congruency to the words that you say. And your body language, your tone, the way that the way that you're moving around, do those things connect? And if they do, then I can trust you. But if they don't, right, if your actions don't match your words or your tone doesn't match your words, then there's incongruence, and I try to figure all that out. So if they can't see your hands, part of the brain is trying to figure out, can I trust you? What are you doing? What are you doing with your hands? Yeah, and probably don't have any pants on, and now we don't know what you're doing with your hands, right? I mean, so,
wait, Jeb. Can we see a further view of you, because we don't know if you have pants on. I need to know if you have pants on.
I will admit, though. Okay. I will. Full disclosure.
Custom made pants, by the way. These pants are made for me. So, so.
Full disclosure on what Jeb was just saying. I knew that we were interviewing Jeb today, and I got dressed. I have one of my favorite dresses on and my heels on. And it's true. Like, suit up, show up, you know, be ready. And it makes a difference, because most of the time lately I do work a lot from home, and sometimes I get dressed and sometimes I don't, but I definitely, I mean, even with selling and, I was coached, when I was in the Tom Ferry coaching program, that anytime you're selling, at least be standing up instead of sitting in your chair. And it's the same deal, like, for what you're saying, for Zoom calls.
Well, that's why I stand up. And the reason I stand up is, if I stand up, I can push more energy through the camera.
Project.
And it also allows me to move. So if you're saying something important, like, you'll notice, like, when you're talking, a lot of times I'll move forward. So I lean into it. So if you see me doing that, even if you're looking in the camera, out of your periphery, you can see my body movement. So I'm able to do this. If I was sitting down with you at a table, I would never stand selling up. I mean, sell standing up in person. Like, if I'm in your office, I'm always going to sit down. Because if you're in someone's office and you're standing up and they're standing up, it's like you're trying to push people to a decision. It creates a level of anxiety, right?
It's a power
and
shift.
I want a place where it's relaxed, assertive, and confident in the room. But in a video call, it's different. In a video call, I want to stand up. It gives me better posture. It allows me to move around. I can shift my position. A lot of times, if I'm doing a discovery call, I've got a whiteboard behind me, so I'm writing on a whiteboard. So in my other studio there, I've got a smart board that I write down notes on. So as I'm doing discovery, I pull all the notes off. And I'm just able to just do something that you can't do sitting down. The other problem with sitting down is that most people sit down all day long. And if you notice, if we were to put a time-lapse camera on you sitting down, you wiggle a little bit, then you lean back, and then you lean forward, and you go over here, and you go over there. And those are, and if we did that over a course of a week, you would see that you have the same body motions and same body positions pretty consistently throughout the day. They're just ingrained habits. So the problem with you on a Zoom call is you're trying to sit, you know, get your good posture in and look up and be excited. But that takes a lot of effort. And then when you start focusing on the person, your subconscious mind takes over the rest of your body. And what happens is you slump over and you lean back and you do all the things that are a habit for you in your chair. So if you just stand the fuck up, right, you won't have that. I said it again. Dadgummit.
We've made you into an R-rated guy. It's great.
I know.
Look at what we've
but
done.
But I do say this to people. I'm all the time. They're like, what should I do? Stand the fuck up. Stand up. Stand the fuck up. Like, stand up and talk into the camera. There's no reason to sit down. Stand up. Because when you stand up on a sales call, you're going to deliver a much better message. And they can see your hands. They can get you waist up. And you're going to be better off. And you're not going to be doing all these things. And I notice it all the time on calls now. I mean, we run a call and I watch people. They like over here. Or they lean up on their desk like this. And when they lean up their on their desk, their head gets really big in the camera. Now, and think about that, right? If your head gets, you lean into the desk because that's what you do, and now you've got this big old head in the camera. Now, think about this. If you were in person with somebody and they got right up in your face, right, just like that, what would you do? You would be scrambling. You'd be like getting away from them. What happens is the sympathetic nervous system that runs, you know, all of the things in your body like blinking and breathing, right? When you see that big old face, the sympathetic nervous system takes over and kicks off fight or flight. So you just scare the shit out of the person that you're having a conversation with that you want to buy from you, right? And then they kill the deal instead of getting married to you.
Ooh, nice. Nicely done, Jeb. Well, the other thing about if you're doing a presentation, in virtual presentation, like just watching Jeb right now, and if you guys get a chance to see, you can see my boring beige wall and me sitting down and not see my hands. But with what Jeb is doing and moving about, it's more interesting because it seems to me like it's a lot easier for somebody to be on a, you know, presentation and get distracted. And if someone's just sitting there, rather than actually presenting as you are right now.
Yeah, it's just a better way of doing this. I started doing this. I started standing up all the time about 4 years ago. And I started doing it on trainings. I you know, at the time, like we've always been doing virtual trainings, but they weren't the greatest trainings in the world. And I would watch the replays of some of my trainers delivering the trainings. I'm like, so it just wasn't great. And we're doing a lot of voiceover PowerPoint versus showing our faces. And I just, one day I'm like, I just don't like this. And I don't even like training on virtual. And I thought, you know, how do I do when I'm training? I stand up. So I stood up. I had a bunch of boxes and foam that I dropped my laptop computer on. So it was sitting in front of me. I'm thinking, this thing falls, it's going to be horrible. And I'm standing up and I thought, I feel better about myself. Like, I feel like I actually accomplished something, did worthwhile work. And so I started doing it and I pushed my trainers to stand up and they resisted for a long time because it's more comfortable and easier to sit down. But I don't have a trainer working for me now that will sit down and do a training, because when you stand up, it's a much better experience for the other person. And that doesn't mean that, like, there are calls where I don't sit down. I was sitting down for a sales call the other day ago. Part of it, I've been on my feet all day long, but it was a very informal conversation, and it was just easy to have that conversation with them. And certainly doing a podcast or what have you, I mean, there's nothing wrong with sitting down and this is what we do. But if you're in sales, like you're delivering a message, they're buying you. So you need to be your best self on that call. And you need to be able to deliver a level of energy that they buy into and say, I want that person to help me out. And by the way, you have to be better on a virtual call than you are in person. You have to be able to deliver your message at a new and better level. And I think when you start thinking about salespeople, and just take millennials and Gen Zs, you got to wake up. Like, you got to wake up and you got to start thinking, you know, this may be the new way of selling, and that's good. And I love it. And boy, it opens up a lot of doors. But 18 months from now, you can't just hop on a Zoom call and put your big old head right in the middle of the camera and expect people to accept that. They won't anymore, because everybody around you is going to get better at this.
And one thing we've been teaching people in some of our improv-based sales training is paying attention to the details. So while we're virtual, we still have to be in the mindset of, like, I'm there. And I need to pay attention to what's going on in your background and what's going on with what you're wearing. And I'm paying attention to the details so I can find a way to create common ground or something to talk about or a connection point. And the exercises that we do on this are fascinating to see how people really aren't paying attention. And it's forcing them to really get observant, because I think that's also going to be a game changer for people.
I'm in violent agreement with you. I think that the details totally matter. And if you were to go on set, and I I shoot videos for some of the larger insurance companies and financial institutions that spend a lot of money on these videos. And we'll go on set and we may do in all, maybe 60 minutes of total shoot, like video. And we'll be there all day. We'll get there in the morning and we do makeup and the camera crew is there. They spend hours working on the lighting. You'll be in the middle of a shoot and they'll stop everything because something changed on a cloud and they go back because they're totally on the details. They've got tape on the inside of your jacket. There's three people watching everything that's happening because they're paying attention to the smallest and slightest details. Because, and I think this is where people don't really get this. The person who is not paying attention to the details, like, who cares? Like, who's going to, why does that matter? But what they don't take into account is that the person that is viewing it, their subconscious brain knows something isn't right. It doesn't know what it is. It just knows it isn't right. And by paying attention to the details, what you're doing is you're bending probability in your favor by getting everything that you possibly can. Like, you're being as perfect as you possibly can in that moment so that when they walk away, they may not know why they want to buy from you. They just know they want to buy from you.
And did I see this right? I do get a lot of emails from you. And like you, I don't get through all my emails. I try to read your emails. Did I see something about a virtual selling workshop?
Yeah, it filled up that day we sent it out. So I think we had seven seats left and they were gone. I mean, immediately. So we run those on a regular basis. I'll be spinning another one up. We'll start another one in a couple of weeks. So if you go to salesgravy.com, click e-learning on the main menu, it'll take you there and you'll find our virtual instructor-led workshops. So there, it's an 8 session. So it's 8 hours, but we take you through completely. We coach you on your look, your framing, and help you with the equipment. And we do tours and show you, everything that we use. It's a cool workshop. They just fill up, and we limit them. So we only let 20 people get in at a time so that we have the ability to have those conversations. I'm teaching one right now. My last class is on Tuesday. And then we're doing a bonus webinar with my tech guys. We could probably get Doug in there because he's a technical Ooh. Genius. That you can just get on and talk to people who this is like the thing that they live for is equipment, and you can have a conversation with them, and they'll walk you through that. So I think we're going to be doing some webinars for the people who have bought the book and they went ahead and jumped into the playbook, which is free with the book.
Well, I wanted to mention it because there's so much great stuff on Sales Gravy University that, and because you have an amazing virtual platform, I think that's just another example, especially for anybody in the training arena that they should go check
that out. By the way, this is my very next book. So my next book is called The Virtual Training Bible, and I'm writing it right now and it will be out very soon. So then I don't have to use my Jeb voice when I talk to you. You can just go in there and read it.
Nice.
When is that coming out? Because we love your gratuitous book plugs, and we bring you back for every book.
You can bring me back if I didn't write a book. I mean, you could just bring me back to play games with me.
Jeb, we're looking for sponsors right now. If Sales Gravy University would like to sponsor this show, we would bring you back on a regular basis. I mean, you could become one of the men of the show.
That may be a possibility. I will get that to my Gen Z marketing manager and say,
call Lisa. Doug, call Lisa.
Just call Lisa. Lisa will probably give you the corporate credit card and we'll be all set up. I mean, she's giving you the combination to the lock on the front of my house. Who knows?
It's all about the...
I might walk in after work one day and we're just having a podcast in the living room. So.
All right. So, Jeb, where can people get your new book, Virtual Selling? And are there any other gratuitous plugs you would like to make before we go?
you can get Virtual Selling basically everywhere. You go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBooks, Google Play Books, anywhere you want to go. It'll be there. Go pick it up. And then, definitely come check us out at Sales Gravy. We got a whole lot of things, including our podcast with Gina that is awesome. And soon Gina's going to have courses on Sales Gravy University. So you're going to get to learn how to do improv that way. And so come to salesgravy.com. It's a fantastic place for you to get a lot of free content that will make you better, including the Yes And podcast, which we featured in our newsletter today.
You are so good. You are so good. Jeb, thanks. We will see you soon. Thanks for being here.
Bye. Y'all. Have a good one. See you later.
Thanks to Jeb Blunt for being on Women Your Mother Warned You About today. And thanks to our Warners for listening. To find out more about our show, go to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. And you can find out everything you need to find out about this show, myself, Rachel, Keith Walters. Where is Keith Walters? He's missing in action. You can also learn more about me at GinaTremarco.com if you want to know more about that. And Rachel?
You can find me all over social media as The Singing Lender, and now my new business, Ultra Fit Lifestyle. And you can find me at both of those locations, thesinginglender.com and ultrafitlifestyle.com. And we would love it if you would give us a shout out to anybody that you know that could use information that you heard on this or any other podcast that we've put out there. Surely someone in your sphere needs some help with virtual selling. So the best gift that you can give to us is to share our podcast as a gift to someone else.
Amen. And I'm going to do a Jeb Blunt, as he always says, gratuitous plug, because he has taught me that phrase. I'm super excited about joining Sales Gravy University and providing improv training on their platform. So stay tuned for that. Go check out Sales Gravy University to learn more about what's coming up ahead. It's a great platform for things that you need to learn in the selling arena.
Awesome.
Bye, Warners.
Bye.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof, monkey, monkey.